This is Common Sense Radio on the Michigan Talk Network.
You know, you might not guess this, but I am a two-time member of unions, the UAW, twice, two different jobs, two different types of jobs. So I know a thing or two about unions and how they work. And one place that I took the job, the union was there, and that's just the way it was. Another one organized while I was there. I didn't get too involved with it. Wasn't really my thing, but one I inherited, and apparently a lot of people inherit these things. Akash Jogli here, he's the policy director at Americans for Prosperity. He says, you know what the truth of the matter is? Some people inherit unions when they take a job that have been around for decades, and nobody that works there even voted for the thing. Akash, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So I was reading with great interest your work here in the Wall Street Journal, and you say in the United Federation of Teachers in New York City organized in 1961, which means there's nobody there that had anything to do with the union. In Florida, only 1% of the teachers in the 10 largest districts had jobs. And those are just the very last of the last old timers when the union came in. And yet nobody ever goes back and recertifies. Why not?
Well, that's sort of just the way it's been, for lack of a better word. Under federal law, the National Labor Relations Act, essentially what the words they use, they assume majority support, which means once the union is voted in, and you mentioned the UAW, right there in Detroit, they organized those Chrysler, GM, Ford plants between 1936 and 1941. Once they are voted in, they are basically there in perpetuity, which means even though the workforce itself cycles, like you mentioned, you took that job, obviously, decades after they organized, you just assume that union, and those workers are never given a chance of whether or not to vote on if they actually want that union representing them.
Well, yeah, you know, and the thing is, it'd be one thing. I don't know how long the union was organized. I made wheels. I made aluminum wheels. I was very good at it. You'd be very proud of me, Akash. I stood there when I was 18 years old, made wheels for about 6 weeks and said, you know, this maybe isn't for me. And so that was there. I don't know how long it was there. But the point of the fact is, some of these unions, like you point out here, have been around for years and years. People that are take the job or forced to join the union, as I was. You don't have an option. You have to pay in to start. And usually they hit you hard the first paycheck. In fact, your first paycheck could be almost non-existent in some of these places because they collect back dues, if you will, to get caught up on somebody who's never even worked there before, which is bizarre. But there is a case coming through the Supreme Court now, a right-to-work case. Will that impact what we're doing here?
A little bit. So this is an important question, right? Michigan obviously became a right-to-work state in the recent past. This case of Janus versus Apsey, Mark Janus is a public employee in the state of Illinois, obviously not a right-to-work state. His case is that, you know, he's obviously forced to pay some money to the union, but he believes in the public sector. The money he's being forced to fund is essentially going towards political speech, because when the union is negotiating with the government over wages and benefits and things like that, they're essentially engaging in political speech because that affects public policy issues. Now, how right to work relates to the issue of these unions never standing for recertification is slightly different, because even though if you have right to work protection, you can opt out of paying for the union, which is great, a really important protection of your First Amendment rights, you're still forced to accept the union's representation. Now, this is a really important point here, because unions complain about this. As you might know, they call people like that free riders. If you opt out of paying for the union, but you're still benefiting from their representation, what recertification would make clear is, are these people actually free riding, or do they just never want the union to represent them in the first place? If these unions stood up for re-election, we would actually have an answer to that question, because we might see that they actually just vote the union out in the first place, which is what happened over 100 times in Wisconsin after Wisconsin passed this law to require public unions to recertify. Over 100 of them simply chose not to stand for recertification because they knew they didn't actually have the support of the people that they were representing, which is something that we don't get to answer simply with right to work.
Well, you know, union power, and Michigan is obviously a place that you think about unions. You mentioned the sit-down strike in Flint that led to the United Auto Workers, and Henry Ford held out the longest but finally was forced to capitulate and let the UAW come into Ford Motor Company. And so the unions have been here for a very long time, and they had a place, and they had a purpose, and they made the workplace safer. and they made it so you had guidelines on safety and hours worked and overtime and all of these things. But the truth is, over my lifetime, most of the things that unions are fighting for, if you will, have been legislated out of relevance because there are OSHA work safety rules. There are child labor laws. There are rules that apply to overtime. There are rules that apply to all sorts of things when you can go to the bathroom and so forth. So the union things that they fought for in the 1930s were very important, but most of those things have been legislated away. Am I right or wrong?
No, you're exactly right. And you'll often hear union advocates refer to these things. I mean, if your best accomplishments are from 80 years ago, I don't know how useful you still are in the workplace. And here's the point, Steve. I think this is something that I think is lost in this conversation a lot, which is that nobody is arguing whether unions are good or bad. If unions are as effective and as important as people say they are, workers will voluntarily choose to pay them, voluntarily vote for them, voluntarily choose to unionize. All we're asking for is that those same workers be given a choice in the matter. I mean, decades ago, those workers voted to organize those auto plants in Detroit. Today's workers in those same auto plants will never be given that choice unless Congress or states pass a law to require union recertification. We're simply asking that workers, individual workers, who may not have, you know, the same feelings about the union that their counterparts did 80 years ago, be given a choice. That gives workers a voice in the workplace, and it also makes unions accountable, right? One of the problems is that they simply have seemed to deviate from what their original purpose was. If they're forced to actually be accountable to the workers they represent, they're going to be more effective at representing and fighting for the people that they claim to be, rather than simply advancing a political agenda or getting distracted with you know, various other matters.
And I guess we'll find out in June how Anthony Kennedy votes. We'll find out about that and whether he sticks around, because that's probably your swing vote. Akash, always a great conversation. Very enlightening. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
There you have it. Akash Jogli. He is the policy director at Americans for Prosperity. If you're trying to get something cool to happen to yourself today, go to steveguru.com. Register to win a free $4,000 Wolverine Water Systems water treatment system. You could be the winner. We'll give that away sometime around like May 1st, first week of May, something like that. SteveGruber.com. Get registered today. Wolverine Water Systems. Go for it, kids.